Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
I guess you could say, folks, that I'm in double trouble because I'm interviewing two people at once. And we'll see how this goes. It's not usual for me, and it's not usual for this series of podcasts, but I'm looking forward to it. Edna Masip. Edna Masip is one of the people I'm going to be interviewing. She comes from Valencia. She has made that very clear to me when I, I misinterpreted her CV as indicating that she was from Barcelona or from Catalonia, but I was wrong. Valencia people, Valencia. And Liron Binberg-Schwarz is from Israel. I know that you went to medical school in Jerusalem, but then after that, you spent a considerable amount of time at the Hospital for Sick Kids, didn't you, in Toronto?
Yes, I did.
4 years.
Yep.
What were you centered on during that time? What attracted you, aside from skiing, aside from poutine, aside from maple syrup, what attracted you, what fun experiences did you have academically and personally there in Toronto?
Yeah, so the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto has a really good fellowship program in the field of gastroenterology and hepatology and nutrition. So that's what really drove me to go all the way there in order to do my fellowship program there. So I was actually very lucky to do my fellowship at SickKids. And while I was there, I decided to focus on cystic fibrosis and pancreatic disorders.
Love it. Now, cystic fibrosis has entered a new era, hasn't it? With first identification of the CFTR and of mutations in that gene and of the changes in the resultant protein, it's been possible to jury-rig more functional forms of the F508 cystic fibrosis protein, hasn't it?
Yeah, so like you said, the discovery of the CFTR modulator drugs have really revolutionized our approach to treating patients with cystic fibrosis. You know, this was a genetic disorder with really bad morbidity and mortality, and now that we can fix the basic defect that leads to the disease, we are significantly improving patient outcomes.
Well, tell me what, this is a triple threat, isn't it? Elexacaftor, and I'm going to mispronounce these, so you have to pronounce them correctly when you say them. Elexacaftor, Tezacaftor, Evacaftor. What should I have said?
Practically speaking, we call it Trikafta. So the triple combination is called Trikafta. That's the name that the company Vertex gave it, and that's the name that we use most commonly.
What does each individual component do?
So when we're talking about CFTR modulators, we have two main types. One of them are correctors, that they actually improve the production of the protein that usually is defective in some of the CFTR mutations. And then we have potentiators that just improve the function of the protein that's in the right place, like on the membrane of the cells. So those drugs are a combination of correctors and a potentiator, which is Ivacaftor.
Fantastic. Now, this has made a big difference, as I understand it, in measurable parameters, biomarkers, really, of CFTR disease, such as sweat chloride. But it's not all about the lungs, is it? Not in CF.
Well, in this forum, we're definitely talking about everything that's happening below the diaphragm, just like Michael Wachowski says very commonly. Cystic fibrosis is well known for the respiratory manifestations, but definitely the gastrointestinal tract is significantly, impaired in patients with CF as well. Diseases such as meconium ileus or pancreatic insufficiency are actually the first presentations of patients that have cystic fibrosis. So while a lot of the studies that were done that led to the approval of the CFTR modulators mainly focused on the lung improvements, we see and we are now having increased information and data that is showing us that these modulators also have a direct effect on the gastrointestinal tract as well.
Let me turn to you to ask for your input into what some of those liver and pancreas manifestations are and how you assess them as you approach the care of a newly diagnosed cystic fibrosis patient?
Well, when we talk about pancreas, we focus on fecal elastase and other type of lab tests like Van de Kamer to assess the fat in the feces. So when we monitor fecal elastase to see what's going on in the pancreas function. There are indirect tests, but it's what we use in the clinic. And of liver disease, there are more lab tests. We had to test transaminase as AST, ALT, DGT, platelets. We have more imaging in the liver, like ultrasound. And when there's an advanced liver disease, we can use also an RMA or something like that. Yeah.
Mm. How long does it take, and in what proportion of patients are liver manifestations substantial?
Well, liver disease in CF patients is not a pediatric disease, because at 4 or 5 years can start, but it's a silent disease. And liver disease, it develops in adult patients, but there's a small amount of pediatric patients, like 5 to 10% of pediatric patients, can develop an advanced liver disease. So it's these patients we have to focus on. And maybe CFTR modulators can change this type, the life of this type of patients.
It's always interesting to speculate on what particular facets of a person's makeup contribute to the development of clinical disease. Think, for example, of alpha-1 antitrypsin storage disorder, in which some kids turn yellow at birth and some kids don't. And so far as I know, it's not really understood what the determinants are that say this one will be affected in that manner and that one will not. Are any of the co-determinants, let's call them that, for cystic fibrosis liver disease in early life known? Don't all answer at once.
Yeah, no answer. I don't think we don't have an answer about which patients are going to develop a liver disease. There are no biomarkers at this moment to decide this patient is going to have a liver disease. So that's why we need to monitor very closely this type of patients. Patients who don't receive CFTR modulators are, I think, the more of patients that can develop this type of disease, but in the adulthood.
As it happens, one of the hobby horses that I enjoy riding is that of transporters and of liver disease. And I do wonder, as genomics become less and less expensive, as to screen a patient for haploinsufficiency for one of those transporters, one or another, whether or not cofactors will emerge. Just speculation and not really relevant to this chat, but I wanted to put it out there. So we have a patient who has liver disease, and we have a study of, 13 versus 14 patients? Tell us about that. You wanted us to take a look at that study. It's one of the references that you recommend to this podcast's auditors.
Yeah. This is one of a very recent publication of a cohort in the States. There were several patients, like 27 patients, and 14 of them were with liver involvement. So what they did was to look at 12 months after starting CFTR modulators and see what happened with these biomarkers, AST, ALT. And what they saw is that the transaminase in this a small amount of children, but only 14, but they improve the liver biomarkers. So they say that maybe starting ETI, ETI.
I'm a pro, yeah. ETI, I can say it.
ETI. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I get my tongue tangled in my teeth all the time. So they found out that starting ETI in these children made a positive difference.
Yeah, because when they start this treatment, they saw that at 12 months, all biomarkers were improved. So they say that maybe starting early in life, this type of treatment can avoid maybe a liver disease.
I'm not sure that that's how I read the graphs in the paper themselves. Wasn't there some talk about the transaminases actually rising in some patients?
So one of the side effects of the ETI or Trikafta therapy is sometimes elevation in the liver enzymes. So there are patients that once you start therapy, they can have an increase in liver enzymes. And this is always a challenge because we know that these medications are life-changing on one hand, but on the other hand, all of a sudden we see that their liver is in stress and we're wondering, you know, do we compromise the liver for the lungs? So this is an ongoing challenge in the field of treating of, you know, in this new era of modulator therapy where the medications are significantly important, but they do have a side effect of infecting the liver.
It's merry-go-rounds and swings, isn't it? What you pick up on one, you lose on the other.
But have to say that luckily, it's not in a large proportion of patients, and many times stopping the treatment for a while until the enzymes improve and then restarting it in a lower concentration can actually help the liver recover and cope better with the medication.
Thanks. That helps me better understand exactly what was going on with those graphs. So what about nutrition? Are people doing better nutritionally as well after beginning ETI?
Well, what we saw when we start this type of treatment is that there's a rapidly gain of weight in this type of patients. But we have to be aware about nutrition because we have small children that are like, I don't know, 20 kilos, and in 3-6 months, they gain like 10 kilos. And yeah, it's really amazing. So we have to be aware because we always said that people with CF has to have a high fat diet and high protein diet. But if these children are gaining all that weight in very small amount of months, we have to say, you don't have to do the same diet. We have to be very, very aware about the nutrition in this type of patients. We have to change our minds and say, no, you right now, with this type of treatment, you have to maintain a regular diet. We have to monitor this type of patients right now.
Yeah. And I just want to add one more thing.
Mm. Yeah.
It's also causing a lot of distress for the patients with cystic fibrosis, the adult patients, because they're used to it that their whole life they can actually eat whatever they want and they usually won't gain weight. And now all of a sudden, they have to watch their weight. In one of the conferences, a lot of the discussion that were led by the patients was their body image. All of a sudden, they have to like be more aware of what's going on because they're gaining weight. So while this is a blessing, this is just a new thing that we have to cope with the CFTR modulators.
Holy moly. What a thing to think about. I've gotten rid of my tapeworm and now I have to be careful on my diet. Right,
it's a problem in adolescence as well.
Oh, yeah. Weight gain in adolescence. Mm-hmm. I was speaking with somebody earlier today who commented that the first thing that a woman does as she enters adolescence is she starts to try to lose weight. Yeah, they reduce their diet. They tend to slim down. And now here you have something that is making things a little difficult. That's all very well for the liver, I suppose, in terms of, and this works in terms of fibroscan measurements and evidences of portal hypertension as well. Those also improve in the 12 months.
So the FibroScan results in the study also improved, yeah.
Well, and indices of hepatic steatosis seen on sonography?
Yeah, so when we do the FibroScan, we have two parameters that we can follow, mm-hmm. the level of fibrosis and the level of steatosis. Mm-hmm. And then, FibroScan is something that was relatively new in the world of CF, but we have accumulating data showing that, you know, patients with CF do have baseline impairments in their liver stiffness and also the level of fat in their liver. And then while getting Trikafta therapy, these levels, the indices, like the outcomes on the fiber scan improve. So, you know, even things that we thought in the past that were irreversible, such as pancreatic insufficiency and, you know, hepatic fibrosis, we're discovering that, you know, there is a way back and these organs are recovering.
Pancreatic insufficiency is exactly what I wanted to talk about. Elastase values, up or down? Elastase values, up or down?
Elastase, yeah. Well, I think that we have to separate the small children who are starting treatment because they have very high levels of elastase after starting treatment. But the older ones, what we saw is that they don't improve fecal elastase. Maybe one, two patients, but there's no recovery when you start treatment after 6 years old. But the smallest children that are starting treatment at 2 years old, I feel that there's a lot of fecal elastase recovery and there's a very improve in function, in pancreatic function.
And stool fat content also goes down.
So yeah. That's a test that we less routinely use in our clinic service because it's kind of difficult to do. And let's just say the patients don't enjoy it either.
Oh, no.
But so the main, the main stool marker that we have for pancreatic insufficiency is the fecal elastase. Mm-hmm. And it really is fascinating to see this recovery of the pancreas. You know, we have patients that are reporting that they require less pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, and I was just saying that while I was here, I received fecal elastase levels of some of our patients that are significantly recovering, even in the older age. So maybe it's just taking more time, but we might actually see a recovery also in the older patients with CF.
Yeah.
You speculate in some of the material that you sent me before we started this discussion that there might be a case to be made for reducing the intensity, reducing the frequency of monitoring of liver disease in these patients. Could it potentially reduce, could ETI therapy potentially reduce the need for routine hepatology surveillance in selected patients? And that's a direct quote. Why? Wouldn't you want to keep on going, keep tight control, make sure that particularly as kids get older, as they turn into adolescents, that they maintain their therapy?
So, first of all, the answer is yes. We always want our patients close to us. We want to see them as frequently as possible. And we want to make sure that everything is going well.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm reassured.
So that's the first answer, and that's the true answer. But I think that what we were kind of alluding to was that as these, you know, as these clinical manifestations of cystic fibrosis improve, then the patients will require less follow-up. We're already seeing this in the lung disease, right? There are patients that used to constantly frequent, that were frequent flyers in the clinic coming every month. Once they were started on Trikafta therapy, we have patients now that come once a year for a routine annual clinic follow-up because they are feeling well and their lung function is stable.
For you folks at home, you've never seen my eyes wider.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. So we really hope that over time, the additional manifestations, including the pancreas function and the liver function, will really either will be able to prevent the manifestations if we give the drugs early enough to our patients. And if not, we'll see improvement and they'll just naturally require less of a follow-up. We are not there yet. We have a lot to learn about this because this is things that we're discovering now and we will gradually learn more about. I think more so in the liver because to begin with, it's a very challenging organ in cystic fibrosis. But I believe that with time, hopefully, we'll be seeing less and less patients presenting with these problems.
How are you dealing with the patients and their families who don't respond? They all go to the same clinic, and here's Leah, who just isn't getting any better.
I just said it's even more complicated than that because there are patients who carry mutations that are not approved for drugs.
Right.
So to begin with, they know that they have, you know, friends or people that they know that are receiving medications that are life-changing, and they don't qualify for those same drugs. So sometimes we have models that we can use to try to find additional mutations that the drugs can be relevant for. I use intestinal organoids as a model in order to see if there are more mutations that will respond to modulator therapy. But unfortunately, we still have a proportion of patients that the modulators are not the answer for them. Luckily, we do have drugs that are in the pipeline that might even fix the very severe mutations, and we hope they'll be available soon.
Well, we're ending on a mixed note, but there's some hope for, there's certainly more hope for cystic fibrosis patients as a whole, as a group, than ever there has been before. And this has been, for me, a really fascinating tour d'horizon. Lovely to be taken through it. Thank you very much. And what song would you like to contribute to the Spotify Espigan favorite songs list? Something that speaks to Espigan, speaks to the topic we've talked about today, and maybe even carries a little bit of Spain and of Israel along with it.
Well, I think this kind of really reflects your summary of what you were talking here. We are in an era that's never been before in the world of CF. And that's why we chose a song by the Beatles. So that's worldwide acceptable. Mm-hmm. And the song is Here Comes the Sun, because that's the era of
it's
modulators
been a long,
in CF.
Cold, lonely winter. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's, I think it will be clear. Aren't those the lyrics? Here comes the sun. All right. Thanks very much again for being our Espigan podcast guests today.
Thank you.
Thank you.